So this little story I wanted to kind of read for you, which is kind of obscure. It's kind of an obscure story from the book of Daniel, from the 14th chapter of Daniel, which our non-Catholic Christian brothers and sisters don't hold as the part of the scripture. We do. And it's a really interesting, it's actually very Eucharistic in nature. It's fascinating, actually. So it's just going to kind of, we're going to read through it and just kind of like, just put it under a microscope to the best of our ability and see what it means for us in light of the years of the Eucharist, you know, what we've been talking about, the love, the appreciation, the mind of God in the plan of, in the plan he has for us regarding the reception of the sacraments, and particularly the sacrament of sacraments, the Blessed Sacrament. And where true faith and false religion part ways. And I'm not sure if I'm going to do a good job of this, probably not, but I'm going to do the best I can because there's so much to this little story that I couldn't pass it up. So this is from the book of Daniel, chapter 14. And so Daniel, of course, he's in exile, of course, because the Babylonian exile, I think there was like three exiles over the span of, a long period of time. And so Daniel, amongst his other three companions, were selected because of their intelligence and their holiness and their youthfulness and their appearance. And they're like, the Babylonians are like, okay, we want these guys to kind of be part of the court. Even though they got themselves into some hot water at times, we know the story, of Daniel being chucked into the lion's den because they wouldn't comply. Azariah, and the three companions were, thrown into the fiery furnace because they wouldn't comply with the royal edict to worship statues and things like that. Because they only worship God, the one God who made heaven and earth. And so, but then, of course, God always showed that these men, these young men, these wise, and holy young men were doing the right thing. And so they were preserved from the lion's mouth or from the from being consumed by the fire and things like that. So then the Babylonian kings are like, all right, these guys are actually telling the truth because no God can save like this, So if you kind of put everything in its context, Daniel's been here for a while now. Daniel's been in Babylon for a while. He's gained his reputation in the realm for being able to unravel the dreams of the king. Not only to tell the king what his dream was. That itself is a miracle, but its interpretation and how that applies to his kingdoms, and to the kingdoms that will unfold in history. And so he's very highly respected, this young Daniel. And Daniel was the king's guest, and was honored above all his friends. That says a lot. So that entire, the kingdom of Babylon, stretched a vast area of territory. It was the greatest kingdom on earth, the most powerful at the time. Now the Babylonians had an idol called Bel, and they were spent upon him every day 12 great measures of fine flour, 40 sheep, and 60 vessels of wine. So this idol, which is made by hands, stood in the temple of the Babylonians and was provided with on a daily basis, 12 great measures of fine flour, 40 sheep, and 60 vessels of wine. And you might think, where is it all going? Who's consuming all these things, you know? It's not the God. It's just, you know, it's fake. So it's nuts. The king also worshipped him. See, let me just stop there for a second, that you see the difference between false religion and true religion? You know, like, God doesn't actually demand all that much. If you think about it, as Catholics, we're actually not expected to do a whole lot. We're expected to be good. We're expected to, you know, to avoid evil. We're expected to, to love our neighbor. We're expected to come to Mass once a week. We're not even expected to receive communion. We're not even really expected to go to confession. So, like, we're only obliged in conscience to go to communion at least once a year, to receive the host once a year. That's the obligation. We have to come to Mass every Sunday, but we don't actually have to receive the Eucharist every single Sunday. Is it advised? Yeah. Is it advised to come every day to Mass? Yeah. Is it advisable to receive communion every day? Absolutely. But our obligations are very minimal, if you think about them. We're not actually obliged to, you know, to, we're not, God doesn't demand, He doesn't demand a lot of us. 45 minutes out of the week, I mean, that's peanuts, that's nothing, really. So we're actually not expected a whole lot. The false gods of this world, like the things that really demand everything of us, all the, you know, like, people will spend themselves on all kinds of things for you know, all, I mean, whether it's wealth or advancement or, you know, getting a big, bulky, you know, body, you know, like, for, you know, like, bodybuilding and weight training and all this sort of stuff. We're like the kind of, like, you would say, people, the things that people make into gods are so demanding of us, but God Himself, is all He just wants is our hearts. So in this story, you can see, you'll be able to pick up on, like, how demanding the gods of this world are. They're so demanding of everything that we have and that we are. Whereas God is actually emptying Himself for us. That's what really stands out in this story. That you contrast what's going on in this story, and the false god and everything that it demands of it, of its followers, is so expensive and so much to it. It's so complicated. Whereas the true God, who we have here under the presence of bread in the tabernacle, He's the one doing all the giving. He's the one spending all the time behind locked doors. He's the one spending all His time waiting for us to receive Him. He's the one who's emptying Himself out, giving us Himself as food, pouring Himself out as a libation. It's God who actually is spending Himself, as we see on the crucifix, the greatest picture that will ever be painted or sculpted on planet Earth is the crucifix. He's the one saying, "This is My body given up for you. This is My blood poured out for you. This is the lamb once slain that is being slain for you." And you contrast that with the false gods of the Babylonians, and even to this day, of whatever god we make things out of. "And they were spent upon Him every day 12 great measures of fine flour, 40 sheep." Can you imagine? I mean, the noise alone would be, I mean, here in southern Indiana, we're well acquainted with the sound of sheep. I had a couple here one time, and they were just absolutely just, I had two sheep. I was looking after two sheep here for our little film shoot, 2017. It was so much work. It was so much work, and they would not let me catch them to return them to the owner. And I literally had to tackle them like a football player. I I have never done anything so exertive in all my life. And I had to get my friend Isaac across the road. He's now a seminarian for the Archdiocese. I'm like, Isaac, these two sheep, they keep running away from me. And it was June. And I was exhausted and I was so sweaty. And I'm like, I can't get a hold of them. They just will not let me. So I had to tackle them. But once you tackle, I don't know if you probably have never done this. But if you ever have to tackle a sheep, as soon as you lock into them, and you actually hold onto them tight, they realize that you've got them, and then they go limp. They're like, okay, you got me, you know. And then they're okay, and then they're okay. And then you bind their feet and put them onto the thing and then they start squealing like a pig. I'm just like, I'm not gonna kill you. It was so much, but think of it, 40 sheep. I'm just like, oh my goodness, but these, oh, I would not wanna be in the Babylonian, Babylonian liturgy at all. You know, gee whiz. But you also see, and I say this respectfully. You can also see the stupidity in false religion. It makes you stupid too, and it makes important people stupid. It makes people who are like higher ups. It makes them, when you don't follow God and you don't keep His commandments and you don't abide by His love, you actually start to become very dull in mind. And very susceptible to all kinds of erroneous thoughts. So the king, who was Daniel's good friend, so that's the king had that in his favor, you know, that even though he's like, he's following his false religion, it's causing him to do weird things and expect weird things from his subjects. He had Daniel as his friend, and that was good. Because when the Babylonians took the Hebrews were kind of captive, what the Jews did is they didn't fight against it. They just basically tried to sanctify themselves in Babylon and just tried to make the best of it, and also to work for the good of the Babylonians who were there, which was a very very unusual approach to being in captivity. You're either trying to fight to get out, or you're violent, or whatever. But the Jews, the true religion, is just like, no. Like, if you're, as Christians, like, and if we get captured, you know, whatever, not only do we want to do well ourselves, but we want our captors to do well. We want them to get to heaven, too. So they have a soul to save, we got a soul to save, and so, all right, I'm under your dominion now, so let's make the best of it. Let's try and get each other to heaven. But false religion makes you really, really dumb and makes you do stupid things and eccentric things, and this is what's going on. So the king, the highest person in the realm, the king also worshipped him and went every day to adore him. But Daniel adored his God. So here's the king going to daily, you know, let's call it daily Babylonian mass. You know, he's a daily communicant. So, but it's an idol. It's false. It's just, it's expensive and it's bloody and it's a mess. And the thing is ugly. And they're feeding it, you know, all this stuff, and they're wasting it. But Daniel adored his God. He didn't participate. Yeah, I'm your friend. I'm your friend to the king, but I adore my God. Not this clay statue you've made. And the king said to him, why do you not adore Bel? Now he's being interrogated. Now the government is saying, hey, what are you doing? Like, you need to be bowing down to this thing as well. This is for everybody, not for, you can't exempt yourself. And he answered, and Daniel answered, and said to him, because I do not worship idols made with hands, but the living God, who created heaven and earth, and has dominion over all flesh. That's what we have here. And the king said to him, does not Bel seem to you to be a living God? Can't you see how much he eats and drinks every day? 12 measures of fine flour, 40 sheep, 60 vessels of wine daily consumed every night. Boom, gone. He goes, do you not believe that, does it not seem to you that Bel is a living God? Can't you see how much he eats and drinks every day? You can't see that? We can. It's gone every day. It's gone. Then Daniel smiled. See, this is the thing though, the virtuous young Daniel. He respects authority. He respects legitimate authority, and he smiled. He could have laughed. He didn't laugh, but because it's so ridiculous to him. Like, he's like, I can imagine that, you know, the little young wise holy Daniel, like, in his mind going, oh my goodness, are you serious? And then Daniel smiled and said, O king, don't be deceived. Do not be deceived, for this is but clay inside and brass outside, and he never ate or drank anything. Believe me. He didn't say that. I actually added that. But he probably wouldn't say, believe me, just take my word for it. This is just clay inside and brass outside, and never ate or drank anything. And the king was angry, of course, and now he's embarrassed. You know, the king feels like, he feels like an idiot. He's just like, maybe this young guy's right. It's clay inside, brass outside. You know, like, is it actually eating this stuff? Where's it going? So now the king's embarrassed, he's angry, and so because he's now been humiliated by this young Daniel, who was refusing to worship it, and he called for his priests. Excuse me. The king was angry, and he called for his priests, and he said to them, "If you do not tell me who it is that consumes these expenses, you will die." Now the priests of Babylon are sweating to death. They're sweating bullets. Because they know what's going on, but they've deceived their king, you know? So if he's like, if you don't tell me who's consuming these things, you're gonna die. So start providing answers. But if you can prove that Bel is eating these things, well then Daniel will die for having blasphemed Bel. So game on. So you have little young Daniel, little young wise Daniel, who's just refusing to say, like, I'm bound down before this monstrosity. You know, I don't care how much you feed this, throw at this thing. It's just like, I'm not bound down to this stupid statue. But then he has his 70 priests of Bel, you know, who are just, you know, it's like they're going to die, or Daniel's going to die. So you need to start providing answers here, because all of you are going to die if you don't, whoever is wrong. But if you can prove that Bel is eating these things, well then Daniel will die for having blasphemed Bel. And Daniel said to the king, "Let it be done just as you say." He's full of absolute confidence. He's just like, I am definitely going to win this one. This is like, I'm totally going to win this battle, in this competition. So Daniel says, you know, I like the old English too. The old English version is, because basically Daniel says what the Blessed Father says. It's almost verbatim. He says, let it be done just as you say. Let it be done to me according to your word. So that's what the Blessed Mother says, you know. He says, let it be done just as you say. And he said, then the story has it, now there were 70 priests of Bel, plus their wives, their babies, and their children. Oh, so now we know where all this food is going. And the king went with Daniel into the temple of Bel. So then they walked in together. And the priests were there too. And the priests of Bel said, "Behold, we're going out. We're leaving. And do you, O king, set forth the food, prepare the wine, and shut the door tight and seal it with your own signet ring. And when you come in the morning, and if you find that Bel has not eaten everything, we will die." or else Daniel will die for having told lies about us. And then here it goes, and they were unconcerned, because they had made under the table a hidden entrance through which they always came in and consumed those things. Bunch of liars. It's just there's 70 liars, you know? And if you think about it, it's just like, you know, the true God, he is the truth. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. There's nothing that's required of you except your hearts. That's all I want. I will be your food, I will be your drink, and I will be that sheep that will be slain for you. Unlike the 12 measures of fine flour, the 40 sheep and the 60 vessels of wine which the false gods of this world demand of its servants. God is like, I will be your food, I will be your drink, and I will be your sheep. I will be everything. Not only will I be the sacrifice that will be offered up, but I will also be the priest that actually offers the sacrifice. We're talking about the true God is giving. It's self-donating. The false religions of this world are demanding, they're expensive, and they're overblown. So they were unconcerned, because they had made under the table a hidden entrance through which they always came in and consumed those things, and they were lying the entire time, because they were following the father of lies and the murderer from the beginning. They didn't mind shedding innocent blood like Daniel. They knew that if Daniel gets slain for not adoring Baal, then they were fine with that, even though they know it was because of their lie. And that is... exactly how the devil operates. He is the father of lies and the murderer from the beginning, as Christ himself said. So they're basically following satanic worship. That's what they're doing. Because the gods, as the Psalms say, the gods of this world are demons. That's what they are. So it came to pass that after they were gone out, the king set the food before Baal, all those provisions. But Daniel commanded his servants. So Daniel is like inspired by God, and he's inspired by God to do what he does. Daniel already saved life before. Remember Susanna, who the two dirty old men were trying to rape, and they were kind of looked upon as the judges of Israel. And they were lying about her, how saying that she was found with another young man in the garden, and blah blah blah, and she was committing adultery, and everybody believed the two judges who were just who had grown old in sin, and of course when she was being led away to be executed, Daniel, who was even younger at that point, said, I am innocent of the blood of this daughter of Judah. The men of Israel have been fornicating with all the women of Israel, and now you're trying to bring down this woman of Judah. He's like, I am not going to have blood on my hands. And they're just like, what are you talking about? And he goes, bring them back and ask them, question them under which tree did they see that? Did they see her with the young man? And of course, they were found out. They were found out. The evil judges were found out, and then they realized that Daniel, this young man, was full of wisdom and holiness and knowledge. And then the two evil judges, they were slain. So Daniel has already saved people before. And so Daniel, he was completely unconcerned. He's totally acting in virtue, and he's just full of confidence. So, but Daniel commanded his servants that they should bring ashes. This is a good one. Which he scattered all over the floor of the temple as the king looked on. And going forth, they shut the door, and having sealed it with the king's ring, they departed. So when Daniel and the king put out all the provisions, the sheep and the flour and the 60 vessels of wine, and the priests are like, okay, we're going out. You seal it with your signet ring, and we come back in the morning, You're going to see that we're right, you know. So Daniel, he knew what was going on. So he had ashes sprinkled all over the floor of the temple around the false god and all the provisions. And the king's probably like, what are you doing? And it's just, but Daniel knew what he was doing. He knew what was going on. And so, and of course, Daniel actually respects the king, and he respects lawful authority. And so he's just like, king, this is what we need to do. And so, we'll show you. And so they leave the temple of Bel, and he has the king seal the door with his signet ring. But the priests went in that night according to their custom with their wives and their children, and they ate and drank everything according to their deceitful custom. And the king arose early in the morning, and Daniel with him. Daniel's probably like, this is going to be good. Can't wait to see those little footprints all over the floor. And the king said, Daniel, are the seals intact? And he answered, they are intact, O king. And as soon as he had opened the door, the king looked at the table. See, the people of this world, they see the big things. They see the grand things. They see all the confetti and all the fireworks and all the fanfare and all the, and they notice the big things, whereas God looks like the little things. He's looking at the minute, the fine details. Daniel wasn't looking at the table. He wasn't looking at the table in front of Bel with all the blood dripping off of with all the sheep in the consumed vessels of wine and the flour everywhere that this monstrosity God has consumed. Daniel wasn't looking at the table. The king, who is worldly, was looking at the table and was just like, whoa, it's gone. And as soon as he had opened the door, the king looked at the table and cried out with a loud voice, great art thou, O Bel, and there is no deception in thee. So the king is just like, there it is. That's exactly what I thought, you know, looked at the grandiose things of life. And Daniel's not looking, he's not looking at the table. He's just like, I don't care where that stuff is gone. It's just, but it hasn't been eaten by God. This false god. And of course the king says, great art thou, Bel, there is no deception in thee. But at this point, as respectful as Daniel is, he just loses it. He starts laughing. But Daniel laughed, and he held the king from going in. So the king is just looking at the table, so it's like, whoa, this is exactly what I thought. But Daniel held the king from going into the temple. He held the king from going in, and he says, look at the floor and see whose footprints these are. Look at the floor. Don't look at the table. Don't look at the god. Don't look at the false god. Don't look at all the razzle dazzle. Look at the floor. Put it all together and make sense of it. And the king said, I see the footsteps of men, women, and children. And the king was enraged. He's been lied to. He's embarrassed in his own realm. I mean, Babylon, it's huge. I mean, now he looks like a fool. Now he's been uttering and issuing edicts for the worship of this false god that he thinks has been consuming all this flour and wine and sheep and every single day for who knows how long, which could have been actually used for, you know, people who actually deserved it in his realm. And here he's been providing it every single day. He's being lied to by these 70 priests for however long, and now he feels like an idiot, and rightly so. And he's like, I see the footsteps of men, women, and children. And then he realizes, and of course, who it is, and the king was enraged. He arrested the priests, their wives, and their children, and they, sh- And they showed him the secret doors through which they came in and consumed the things that were on the table. The king therefore put them to death and delivered Bel into the power of Daniel, who destroyed him and his temple. Game over. And so it's just, you, this is like a, this is, it's a, it's kind of like almost like a magnification of what goes on under heaven every single day with the true religion that we're supposed to engage in and the false religions of this world. And anything that we make bigger than God, you know, whatever it may be, you know, whether it is food, whether our God is, you know, as St. Paul would say, you know, who's these people who are on their way to destruction, their God is their belly and their glory is their shame. And, you know, people who idolize X, Y, or Z, you know, whether it's whatever, carnal pleasure or whatever the thing may be, you know. So it's very distinguishable. The way God operates, the way he communicates, he's not demanding. He's not demanding at all. All he demands is our love. I mean, yeah, we're required to do certain things. You know, we're supposed to be consistent, do our duty, to love God, love our neighbor, to think thoughts of peace, to pray, because that's why we're here now. We're here now because we're on retreat. We're doing a daily, a day of reflection, and the raising of our mind and heart to God is how we actually grow in His love. Because if you don't spend time with the beloved, you don't really get to know the person. And that's how, you know, people kind of get to know each other, get married, and, you know, form a family, is through communication and through talking to one another. And that's what God wants of us. He wants us to know Him, to love Him, to serve Him in this life, and to be happy with Him forever in the next. And that's basically why we're here. I mean, we do other things. We eat and we play and we do other things. And drive cars, and go here and there, but our chief activity that we're supposed to engage in is to love God with our whole heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love our neighbor as ourself. And as St. John Vianney would say, you know, to pray and to love is the chief, duty of man. That's the dignity of man, he said. The dignity of man is to pray and to love. And that's really how we should be spending our time. In Him we should live and move and have our being, and not be deceived. It is possible, as we know from the story here, it's possible to be deceived. It's possible to kind of err in thought, and to be confused, and to think something is a certain way when it's actually not. And then when we find out it's not that way, then we're embarrassed, and then. And we're angry, and we feel deprived. As this king, you know, we felt like deceived, and he was deceived, but now he found out the truth, and it's a true story. I mean, this is not a fairy tale. This actually happened. This is a historical event, which is a historical document. But it can happen. The people can fall into just utter stupidity. And spend themselves on so, not only themselves, but all of their resources on so many useless things. I've seen people use their revenue, their money, and their time, and their energy, and they waste it on just silly things. And it's sad, because they could be using it on other people, or, you know, helping people get ahead, or get out of bad situations, or poverty or whatever. I mean, people throw so much of their resources at useless things. So the fact that we have the Blessed Sacrament, and that we're drawing close to Christmas, this is like the time of year where this is like an ideal retreat, because not only are we getting close to Christmas. And I love Christmas. I mean, for me, I jokingly say I only have two seasons, preparation and celebration of Christmas. And then once it's over, I just start preparing for Christmas again. My favorite website is that, like, countdown, that Christmas countdown, you know? You got 200 and some odd days until Christmas. It's my favorite website. But this is like we have the Blessed Sacrament as the as our constant companion. We have the bread of life to keep us nourished, to keep us spiritually nourished, and to be our daily bread, to be our daily companion. He is both our food and our drink. He is our consolation and our strength. And the reception of the Eucharist I have a lot of non-Catholic Christian friends here in Bloomington, and they're wonderful people. I love them. But I would love to, I have the opportunity, but not always. I would love to share with them that love story just gets better. Everything that they say is like really, really good. It's like, I love, my friend Pastor David here, and he's just absolutely, the guy is amazing. He's amazing in every single way. And I'm so amazed by him, by his goodness and his love of Christ, and we get together and talk about his miracles and all the things that he did. And one of these days, maybe I'll have a greater opportunity to kind of like share with him that, because we haven't spoken about the Blessed Sacrament yet. Maybe this year the Eucharist might afford that opportunity. But one time he took me out to dinner here at the Bichettos and wanted me to explain to him the doctrine of purgatory so he could explain it to his stepmother, because she didn't understand purgatory that well. And so maybe next time I'll be able to kind of share with him what we believe about the real presence, and because it is, when you hear the words of Christ, and that unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you will have no life in you. And of course the Jews themselves at the time who were listening to him, they themselves understood it the same way that we understood it, actually, really, like real food, real drink, his body and blood, and they themselves were scandalized. This is the thing. I'm not sure why non-Catholic Christians don't interpret John 6 as what we believe, because even the Jews themselves understood it that way. Now he did say, my words are spirit and life. It is the spirit that gives life. The flesh profits nothing. He says that in the same context. But the Jews at the time says that this is a hard saying. That's how they responded. They said this is a hard saying. Who can endure it? And many of them went away. And of course, Christ himself said, he said to his apostles, he said, will you also go away? And of course, one voice rang out, it was St. Peter, he says, like, he said, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of everlasting life. If you translate that into contemporary language, it's like, okay, you've been right up until now. And then he says, will you also go away? He goes, have I not chosen you 12, and yet one of you is a devil? So even the Jews themselves understood what he meant by the real, true, substantial presence. His own, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you will have no life in you. For my flesh is real food. My blood is real drink. He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me, and I in him, and I will raise him up on the last day. Anybody who eats me will have life because of me, as the Father has given life in me. So anybody whom I give life, will have it abiding within them. So he actually meant it. I in you, you in me, that we may be one. He kept chipping away at it. He's like, will you also go away? As he said, and the Jews are like, how can this is a hard saying, who can endure it? And then he says something, I'll end with this, but he says, He connects his ascension with the Blessed Sacrament, the Bread of Life discourse. He said, does this scandalize you? Does this scandalize you? What then if you shall see the Son of Man ascend to where he was before? Which is kind of a mysterious statement. Like, does this scandalize you? My doctrine on the Eucharist, on my feeding you with my flesh and blood, does this scandalize you? What then? What will you say then if you see me ascend to where I was before? this, you know, it's kind of an interesting, it's a very mysterious statement. So if he, you know, he gives us himself in sacramental form. And so it's not cannibalism. It's not cannibalism because it's under sacramental form. It's under the appearance of bread and wine. So with that story, the Bell and the, you know, Daniel the king and Bell and the 70 priests of Bell, this might be food for thought as we kind of journey in our, you know, in the exercise of true faith and true love and true holiness and greater appreciation and thanksgiving for the gift, the ultimate gift and the greatest gift of the Most Blessed Sacrament as we draw close to Christmas. Glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit. Most Sacred Heart of Jesus, Immaculate Heart of Mary, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, Amen.